This week's episode is sponsored by Spaces. Spaces is a new platform backed by 15 plus years of educator feedback designed to document the process and progress behind student learning in your classroom. Join the Spaces community to connect with educators across North America and gain access to free teacher-created resources, help educators who are just starting out on their journey, and learn new things from teachers who have been there before. So visit community.spacesedu.com today.
Is this the teacher hotline?
Hello, everyone. My name is Ronald Hay, and welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Hotline, where we try to answer some of the most pressing questions for teachers in and outside of the classroom. Today, our caller comes from Francine from the Upper Grand District School Board. Francine, how can we help you today?
Hey, Ron. With lockdowns easing up and everything slowly getting back to normal, I think I'm ready to do some traveling. I've always wanted to teach abroad. Working and being able to travel at the same time would be amazing. I was wondering if you have any friends that took this path and could shed some light on their experiences. I'm pretty open to teaching anywhere in the world at this moment, and I'd love to know what steps they took to make it happen. Was their salary comparable? But more importantly, is it something worth doing? Thanks.
Thank you so much, Francine. I think we all have a little bit of that travel bug in us right now. And teaching internationally has always actually been a dream of mine. And absolutely, I agree. If your lifestyle allows it, I think you should jump all in. So Francine, today I have someone special to come in who has completely embraced international teaching. And I think she can really shed some light on the experience. Today I bring in Renee Faubert, a guidance and learning resource teacher and former arts teacher at Canadian International School in Vietnam. Renee has been teaching for 8 years, and she actually started her career in teaching in Ecuador, teaching MYP design. Before moving to Vietnam, Renee was a boarding advisor and arts teacher at Branksome Hall. Renee graduated with a B.Ed. From Queen's University. Renee, it has been so long since I've seen your face and heard your voice. This is so lovely. How are you doing?
I'm really well, thank you. Just living the life. Here in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. We just got out of strict lockdown.
Oh my goodness. So you guys were just in lockdown not too long ago.
Yeah,
right?
So our fourth wave was the worst wave of COVID. And they're just in the middle of their vaccination campaign of vaccinating 98 million people. That's our population of Vietnam.
Oh my goodness.
And they basically had to open up before the economy crashed. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And you guys are now, what stage? Do you guys have like stages? Like are businesses open right now?
Well, it's like very strange in the city. So things are opened, but it's like kind of done by districts. So I live in District 7 and they have a lot more space. So they decided to open everything first, kind of. So I actually just sat down in a restaurant for a sit-down meal last week. And that was the first time since May.
Holy moly. So, that is wild to think about.
Yeah.
I know our experiences probably isn't that much different. We just came out of lockdown probably sometime in the summer. So we've only been a couple months free right now. But this will definitely be an interesting episode because I'm sure teaching abroad, you know, without COVID is very, very different with teaching abroad during COVID. So I'm sure you can shed a lot of light on that experience and what that's been like.
Absolutely.
So why don't we jump straight into what the caller wants to know. Lisa wants to know a little bit about what it's like to teach overseas. So before we even jump into that, maybe you can shed a little bit of light about why you decide to leave Canada and teach abroad in the first place. Like, how did you arrive to that conclusion that that's something you want to do?
Well, I always wanted to see the world. And I didn't just want to see the world on vacation for 2 weeks. By, you know, leaving Toronto, seeing every like major city and monument in the world, and then coming home after that, I wanted to actually like live and experience what it felt like. And I had had a few abroad experiences before. I worked at a summer camp in Wales when my first year of university. My practicum at Queen's actually allowed me to do a 4-week stint in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. So I had kind of known what it felt like to teach abroad and like live in a place. And I decided it was a great way to gain teaching experience and for me to see the world. So I got a job.
So there are so many places in the world to travel and see and teach. How did you end up choosing Vietnam?
Vietnam, I would say, kind of fell in my lap because a colleague at Branksome, when I worked there, she had formerly taught in Vietnam and just raved about it. And at first, like, I really wasn't sure. Asia wasn't on my radar. I was like, there's too many people there. It's too busy. I don't want to, like, Asia doesn't do it for me. But she, like, basically convinced me through, like, all of our chatting that it was a really cool place to be, especially in Saigon and Ho Chi Minh City. And she had shown me this job, and I applied for it, and I got it. So I ended up here, and I've been here for the past 4 years. But it was easier to get this job in Saigon because I'd already had teaching experience. When I first moved to Ecuador, I was given a, not given a job, I got a job at a bilingual school, and it's a really great school. But I just needed like experience. So I kind of took the first job that was given to me.
So it sounds like your experience, at least with trying to get a job overseas, it seems to be a little bit different, right? You kind of knew someone that kind of pointed you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. For an average person, how does one person start looking for a job abroad? Is there like an agency that typically helps you, or do you have to do this on your own? How does that typically work?
Yeah, so there's actually plenty of places that'll help you find a job abroad. I know when I moved to Ecuador, Queen's actually helped me get my job abroad because I went to TORF, which is the Teachers International Fair that they have every year, that they hire teachers to go abroad to various countries, and they host all these schools to come in to hire teachers. And that's a really good place to start, especially if you're looking to gain international experience. But people also use Search Associates and Shroll. So,
sorry, what? Trolls?
Shroll. So I think
Trolls. Oh, not Trolls.
Or
like
ISS
the little monsters.
Shroll, and they're just like platforms to help teachers find a job internationally. And Search Associates is a little bit expensive. It's $250. But it gets you into a fair. And obviously this year they've been like online fairs, but there's always like a lot of schools participating. So you're pretty much guaranteed a job by the end of it.
If you decide to pay this cost, there's a higher chance of you perhaps getting a job. Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly. So like the cost is associated with you actually getting a job. So you pay and then you get that for a year, but usually the cost would get you into a fair, and you don't like, it guarantees you a job pretty much. Does that make sense?
Interesting.
So you don't pay anymore until you get a job.
Right. Right. It's almost like finding like, an agent for like acting or whatever. Like you only pay them when you get work.
Exactly.
Okay. So these agencies or whatnot, like, do they also help you with like the cost of moving? Like, obviously, like you moving to Vietnam, you got to pay for flights, you got to pay for, you know, all that stuff. Who ended up covering the cost for that? Is that out of your pocket?
No. So it's out of the school's pocket that you're hired from. So I've worked at two different schools in Vietnam. I've worked at the American school, and then I worked at the Canadian International School. And both help me get here. So they pay for my flight every summer. So they pay for a round trip flight or a one-way flight there, a round-trip flight the next summer, and a one-way flight home on a two-year contract. So I get a flight every year. And both schools do that, or did that. And it's obviously been a little bit different with COVID. We've been given the money instead.
Right.
To spend as we wish, because we can't actually leave.
So flights they cover. What about other logistical items when it comes to teaching abroad? Like, I don't know, like finding an apartment or getting a brand new bank account. Like, does the agencies or these schools, do they help you facilitate some of those bigger moves? Or is that, again, kind of all on you to figure out?
Yeah. So the school, again, should be helping us with these things. I know some people, they usually recommend an agent for housing and you're
a separate agent aside from
usually one that they work with. And you can choose whether or not to go through that agent if you so wish, and they help you find an apartment within your budget and what you're looking for. And they take
you have to like pay them a commission fee or anything like that.
No,
like
so
after they find you a place.
The agents here, the housing agents, actually make money through the landlord of the house or the apartment that you're renting. So we pay like 2 months security deposit, and their fee would be a 1 month security deposit, but we don't cover any of that. The landlord of the apartment covers that.
Oh, cool. And what about something like a bank account and, you know, all your financials and transferring your money over? Like, how does that work?
Again, the school should be helping with all of that, since they have to get you set up with a bank account because that's how they're going to pay you every month. And they have to make sure you're working in the country legally. So, and the bank account is also affiliated usually with your work permit or your visa of living there. And they'll help you set it up. In Vietnam, it's pretty easy because everyone either speaks like Vietnamese or English, or mostly Vietnamese, obviously, but most people speak English. And they kind of fill out our papers for us and we sign. And then you have a bank account. So I have a bank account here that I have a USD bank account and I have a VND bank account. And my paycheck.
So they pay you in USD?
They pay me like 70% in USD, and then I get a little bit in Vietnam dong.
Okay, right, because you obviously need to pay your bills here. What's the currency?
The Vietnamese dong.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. They pay you in two different currencies, eh? Mm-hmm.
But I think that can sometimes be the norm in various places around the world, because the USD is, like, the US dollar is always steady. Right. So it's a lot safer to find a school that pays in US dollar or a good currency, at least. So you don't really have to deal with obnoxious exchange rates.
Right. Is there anything else that I'm missing, like that you had to kind of get set up when you kind of moved over to Vietnam, other than your bank account, your apartment? Was there like, what other big things have to get done logistically when you're considering moving to a different country?
I've been here such a long time.
Well, you mentioned your visa,
right?
Yeah. There's the visa.
So the school, I do remember moving to Vietnam, and the visa process was a little bit complicated, but it just took time. So I had to like get, obviously, my degrees notarized. I had to get letters of experience from various places that I worked at. What else did they require? Like, copies of passport, obviously. And I had to take a bunch of these things to get notarized. So you have to pay for notarization fees. And then when they were notarized, I had to take them to the Department of International Affairs in Ottawa, or the Department of Defense or something like that. It's a big building in Ottawa. Get another stamp there. And then I had to take them to the Vietnamese embassy to get another stamp there.
Oh my God. So that's a whole process, you're saying.
But it varies by the country that you're going to. So like I had all this documentation, but I actually came into Vietnam on a tourist visa, and then they switch everything when I'm here. But I think that's different now because there's new like laws, and obviously there's no tourism during COVID. So
of course,
they're actually only letting experts into the country at the moment. I like hand quoted experts because there's
experts.
There's ways around it.
Right, right. Sounds very sketchy. what about interviews? So how does the whole interview process work? Obviously, I'm assuming it's online. Like, you're not flying to Vietnam for these things. So how many rounds of interviews did you go through? Was it fairly simple, pretty similar to what I guess you would get here at TDSB or a private school here?
Yeah, so it is a little bit different. I did obviously a bunch of interviews before I worked in Ecuador. And then I did a bunch of interviews before moving here. International schools aren't necessarily looking for, like, they obviously want your teaching philosophy to align with their values, but they're actually looking for whether or not you're a good fit for the school.
And what do you mean by that?
Like, are you a good fit for the country? Do you think you're going to be able to do the things here that you want to do? Are you going to get along with your colleagues? Do you coach certain sports that the school offers? Are you interested in certain things? Are you basically going to get along with all these people that you're going to be working closely with for usually 2 years?
Right. So yeah, you're going to be moving to a far, far place. Yeah. A lot of it, sure, like there's a lot of great teachers out there, but I guess they're looking for someone that can, I guess, handle that new change and excel in that new environment.
Exactly.
Right?
They're really looking for people that are going to like where they are going to be living, who are going to be able to handle where they are going to be living, and also people that fit in with their school environment in various ways. And like, obviously they want you to be the best teacher you could possibly be.
So that's actually a good segue in terms of talking about your current experience. Maybe let's just start off by asking, you know, what's your experience been like so far at your school? Have you been enjoying it? What are some things that kind of have you enjoyed or shocked you or you've disliked? Just general overview of what it's been like over there.
Yeah. So I guess because I've been at two schools here, my first school that I was hired to from Canada, the American school, like they are both good schools. They're both international schools within the city. They do both have owners. So it is a for-profit business. So it's a little bit interesting how things are done, in a sense that sometimes we get a lot of intake of students that maybe that are more ELL than we are expecting.
What's ELL?
English language learners.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Or like it's a business for them. So they want the money from the parents.
Of course.
So, and not a lot of international schools have a actual like spec ed program or learning specialist or like specialist learning teachers, in a sense that they're not there to help with any problems that might arise. And actually my position at CIS as a learning resource teacher is a newer position. So they didn't actually have extra help prior to that.
Really? So how did student get extra help then?
I don't know because it happened before I got there. There was a teacher that was doing it for one period a day, but it's more than a one period a day position. It's a really
That seems like a pretty.
I don't want to say I'm working all the time, but my days aren't scheduled by classes. They're scheduled by time people need me.
Right. Like appointments.
Exactly.
So you've taught here in Canada, you've taught in Vietnam, you taught in Ecuador. What are some of the major cultural or even like logistical differences between Canadian education or in your case, I guess, the Vietnam education system? Like, have you noticed anything like, wow, like this is something that Vietnam does very differently than Canada does? Anything that comes to mind?
I think just the way that kids learn is different and there's cultural expectations that are different. I do remember reading a book actually when I was at Branksome called Culturally Responsive Teaching and Learning. And it was recommended by my boss at the time. And they basically discussed how culturally everyone learns differently and everyone's brain processes things differently. So in Asia, students are primarily used to like memorizing things. So really teaching them how that learning is so much more than just, you know, reading and spitting out knowledge. They have to be able to make connections to various things is important.
Do you find, I'm actually curious, you kind of triggered an on-the-spot question here. Do you find that like the students in Asia or in Vietnam in your case, do you find that when they're learning that there are discussions, like are they open to having class discussions or is it more lecture-based? And the reason why I ask that is because I find that a lot of my students that are from Asia, from all over different parts, whether it's Korea or Vietnam or China, I find that those students, they, to your point, they're so used to memorizing and having teachers lecture at them that they struggle with the ideas like, what, you want me to participate now? Is that your experience over there with the Asian students?
Yes and no, because I think it really depends on how long they've been at the school. So I think if students are coming from public schools into the private institution, then that is a problem because they're not used to that. And also public schools in Vietnam have like 45 students in a class.
What?
And yeah.
And no one complains about yes. this?
It is a communist country.
Oh. Touche, Renee. Touche. I guess there's no such thing as a teacher's union over there then, eh?
But when you go into private education, there's usually foreign teachers and like down to 20 kids in a class. So you can have that opportunity to have discussion. So the students that have been at the Canadian International School for years and years have been taught by Canadian teachers and they really understand that kind of like method of teaching.
Wow. Here we are as Canadian teachers complaining about 30 students in a classroom. 45. Jesus, that is that's absolutely insane.
Yes. But like realistically, there shouldn't ever be 45 students in a class.
You're right. Realistically, it doesn't matter what country you're in. There should never be 45 students in a class. That's wild. Culturally speaking, I know we were talking offline. You're saying that students actually call teachers by their first name, like Mr. or Mrs. Renee in this case. Is that true? Or
yeah.
What was that like? That must have been really weird the first time a student called you by your first name.
Yeah, actually, it wasn't overly weird because they did the same thing in Ecuador. I was Miss Renee in Ecuador and I Miss Renee in Vietnam. And actually, Branksome was the only place that I was ever Miss Faubert.
Wow. And cool.
I guess I like both. I don't know. It's kind of, but I am used to going by Miss Renee now. So
right.
I find it's a little bit, it's slightly less formal, but respectful.
At the same time, yeah.
Yeah. And teachers are very respected here. So.
So you're saying like, we're like doctors and lawyers over there?
100%.
Really? I need some goddamn respect at my school. Maybe I should move to Vietnam. What about money? I want to know, how much do teachers get paid or how do teachers get compensated in these overseas teaching abroad opportunities? Is it comparable to what you would get paid here at the TDSB or any other independent school system? What's that like?
Yeah, so it is comparable to what you would be getting paid at home. It depends on, well, obviously all schools pay differently based on experience or what kind of school they are. I get paid approximately the same that I would make in Canada, but it's all based on my cost of living. And my cost of living is significantly lower here. Like I'm living in a one-bedroom apartment in a nicer district for $600 USD a month.
Oh my God. That's like a steal. You would never get that here in Canada right now.
Exactly. And especially not in Toronto.
No, definitely not. So you're saying you're living a higher standard of life, I guess, over there.
Yeah, I definitely have a higher standard of life here. Like it's easy. It's cheaper to go out and eat. Like you can get street food here for $1 on the side of the road.
So you're like a millionaire, like, over there as a teacher.
Exactly. And you know what? Like, I get paid in dong, and like a million dong is actually like $60 Canadian. So
wait, you have like a million dong is $60 here in Canada?
Yeah.
So you're saying like your bank account has like a trillion, millions and millions of dollars. Millions. If I were to look at it. So you're literally a millionaire in Vietnam right now.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I got some self-reflection to do after this conversation then. That is fascinating. What about things like benefits?
So schools provide healthcare. What other type of benefits do we have? I guess healthcare is like the biggest one, because you want to make sure that you're covered by a good insurance if something were to ever happen here. So you're not paying out of pocket.
Right. Because obviously in Canada, we have our free healthcare exactly. system. In Vietnam, I'm assuming if you go to a hospital, you got to pay out of pocket.
So it is significantly cheaper to go to a public hospital here in Vietnam, but the care you're going to get is going to be a lot different. So, and there's obviously like a language barrier. So schools actually just make sure our insurance covers going to international hospitals so that we can get the care that we're used to getting at home and abroad.
We did an episode a couple of weeks ago about the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan. Do you guys have any sort of a pension or anything like that to help you with your retirement planning, or is that kind of not really a thing when it comes to abroad teaching?
We don't have a pension plan. It's kind of all up to us on how we want to deal with our savings. There was a book recommended to me. And he's kind of big in the international system.
Is it Millionaire Teacher?
Yes.
Hey, no way. I literally just had him on my podcast a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And everyone kind of like, there's a Facebook group that people post on and discuss and ask questions. And
cool,
that
okay.
kind of, I haven't dove into that part of my life yet.
Hey, it's a good book. And hey, you should listen to that episode afterwards too. He's a really good speaker as well. Andrew Hellam, check him out.
Yeah.
What about contracts? So I think, again, we were talking offline earlier. You're saying you've been there for about 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Are these typically 1 year? I think you said 2 year contracts, right? These are typically 2 years?
Yeah. So I'm actually in a special case right now. So my first school was a 2 year contract, and I finished that 2 year contract. If you're going to go abroad, you should do the length of your contract. It doesn't look good to break a contract. It means that maybe you're not as reliable, and teachers do want you there for a long time just because they want to retain teachers, and it looks better for them and it's better for the students. And 2 years is a good time. At the Canadian International School, I managed to get a 1 year contract because I had plans to leave after that. But I actually ended up staying a second year. So I just signed another 1 year contract. And I will continue, if I were to stay, I would continue just signing 1 year contracts from here on out. But usually when you're hired at a school, the minimum length is 2 years. Some schools will make you sign 3 years. You can't, right. It's hard to get a 1 year contract.
Interesting.
Or schools don't really want to give you a 1 year contract because it just means that you're kind of there to travel and you're not there for the school, when really you should be, like, it's your job and you should be there for the school first. And travel is just a perk of working abroad.
Now, it sounds like you've done a little bit of traveling pre-COVID, at least. Mm-hmm. Where have you gone seeing us since you've been in Vietnam?
Well, I've managed to see most of Vietnam since COVID happened and before that. But my last international trip in January of 2020, right before shit hit the fan, was to Japan. And I spent a week in Japan with some friends, just traveling.
God.
We flew into Osaka. The flights were $250 round trip. They were very, very cheap.
Get out of here. $250? That would get me a trip to like Ottawa. Are Are you kidding me? $250? That is crazy.
And before that, Thailand, it was so easy just to like go to Bangkok for the weekend or go to Singapore for the weekend or go to all these places for the weekend because they were so close and it was so cheap to get to them. So I did Phuket before, like as one of the breaks in 2019. And when my parents came, actually the year before, we did Cambodia and Angkor Wat.
Wow. So you've been very well traveled ever since you've been there for the last 4 years then.
Yes. Actually, my goal to coming to Asia was to hit up Myanmar, but that was like pre-COVID, pre-everything else that happened there. So unfortunately, it's not on my list anymore. But maybe someday in the future.
Maybe someday. Renee, I'm looking at the time. Time, it just flies here when we're recording these podcasts for the Teacher Hotline. To wrap things up, if you were to start the process all over again, knowing what you know now, is there anything you wish you knew or would have done differently when going through the whole process of teaching abroad?
For me now, and I think I've like finally figured out, is just to like ask about salary and like know your self-worth and negotiate. That's really, really important.
Are you saying that there are perhaps some schools that might underpay teachers and other schools that might pay a little bit more fairly?
Yes, absolutely. And you don't know until you ask. And it's really okay to ask when you're interviewed and you're offered the job. Ask those people to speak with teachers that work at that school already. And they can tell you their experience of working there and what it's like, and if it'll actually fit in with your lifestyle. Remember, schools are still trying to sell themselves to you as much as you're trying to sell yourself to them. So sometimes things are sugar-coated, and maybe that's a little bit harder to adjust to if you take the job and get it. You might hit some unexpected things. But really ask for other people's experience working there, or even just other people living in the city or the place you're going to. What is it like?
Would you recommend this experience for teachers currently interested in teaching abroad, Renee?
100%. I recommend that any teacher that has the capabilities or doesn't, even families like that are teachers, to teach abroad. It's a great experience. So I think everyone should do it.
Final question, Renee. When are you coming back?
I will be home in the summer of July 2022. So next summer.
Next summer. Are you coming back officially or is this more like a little pit stop?
I have not yet decided.
Ah.
So other countries are calling my name, but I also want to see my family. COVID made it really hard to get home, especially being so far. So
I'm sure
I think that it's time to spend a little bit of time closer to home just for maybe a year, and then I'll be abroad again.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for your time. For those of you who don't know, right now I'm recording this episode at 7 p.m. at night in Eastern time. And it is 7 a.m.
6 a.m. It's
6 a.m. 6 a.m. Oh, my goodness. Renee was up at like 4 a.m. in the morning this morning to try to get organized to help me record this episode. So we really appreciate it. You got to go to work. It's Monday over there and it's Sunday over here. So you need to get ready for your job, Renee. So we really appreciate your time today for tuning in. And thank you so much for all of our listeners as well for tuning into today's episode. If you enjoyed what we talked about today, feel free to check us out on Apple, Spotify, and Google. And of course, don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram for more future episodes coming up. Listeners, thank you so much, and we will see you all next Monday. Take care, everyone.